first speaker, Cornelius.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Good morning, family. I'm Cornelius. I'm a recovering addict.
Hey, Cornelius.
And first and foremost, I would like to thank God, the Most High God, and CPR CNA 21. I'm grateful to be here, and I hope everybody has had a grand weekend. For the last couple of days, we've been watching the sun come up and watching its sunshine off the ocean. And there's something about that light that hits that water that no matter where you go, that light is going to follow you. Like it was intended, its purpose was to shine right on you. And I'm eternally grateful that in Narcotics Anonymous, we get in touch with a whole lot of things along the journey down the road of recovery. I'm grateful to be here. It's been a good weekend, and you know, we've said some prayers. The little crew I'm with, we got a little 12-year-old with us, and he's been up here having fun. And I've been blessed with a gift called recovery that mere words can't explain. The language of empathy has its own words. It's universal language, and I love this topic. I've been blessed with the opportunity to get up and do early morning meetings, so I'm used to meetings in the morning, but I'm just so used to being quiet and doing a lot of listening, and that's what empathy to me gets in touch with, learning through listening. You know, allowing yourself to get in touch with another's feelings. I guess in my story, it started off, you know, real simple, United States versus Cornelius. You don't beat a whole country. You know, I was sitting up in treatment, and we were waiting on a Sunday afternoon for the people who had been bringing the meeting into treatment, and they didn't come. They were up here in Ocean City. And they ain't sent no replacements, so we were sitting there in treatment about 15 or 20 of us. And I mean, we were some messed up little crew. And it dawned on me and this lady that after half an hour went by, there wasn't nobody coming, that we had to come up front and have a meeting anyway. Y'all told us meetings go on, you know. And I am so grateful that the name of that group was the Beginners Group. A little Sunday afternoon meeting. And in fact, it was my very, very, very first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. So with about 20 plus days, I was getting in service and didn't even know it. So me and the lady, we got up front, and we're going to have the meeting anyway. And it didn't make no difference who shared or who chaired. The meeting's supposed to still go on. Well, it was like I inherited the group because didn't nobody want to do no service work in the group. That group that had been coming, they stopped coming, and we just kept the meeting going. So I got in service real, real early, and by the grace of Almighty God, getting a sponsor and doing a lot of listening, I learned that empathy can really, really help you get to where you need to go. And I need to take a moment to thank God for my predecessors, because all those along the path before me was here showing me by example what Narcotics Anonymous was all about. And you hear some things like get a sponsor, get into the steps. My first sponsor told me, say, look, even helping to put up the chairs at the end of a meeting, you might just want to say hi to somebody. So it got me in touch with, no matter how you feeling, what's going on with you, If you only get outside yourself for a mere few moments, you might can make a connection with another human being. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. He also taught me how to look for the good in each and every one of us. Because there's some good in each and every one of us, just as well as there is that monster that loves addiction that's inside each and every one of us. There's a negative side and a positive side to each and every one of us. And I thank God that y'all have helped me treat that negative side of me, even though there's still some work to be done. In the spirit of humility, I need to remember to remain teachable that Narcotics Anonymous can do without me, but I cannot do without Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm real grateful that along my process, not only did I listen and take suggestions, get in service, but I found out that service work was like getting in the trenches, you know, to sort of get in the middle of this thing. And as I was listening, there was a lot of folks sharing their life and their recovery with me. And let me say this for a moment, y'all, because this is the time of the year that can be a real hard time for me. April the 12th, 10 years ago, I had about 13 months, and I experienced my mother passing away. So it's been 10 years since then. Every April the 12th, we up here. I try to use this to sort of support me along through my feelings of grieving because I lost my best friend, my mom's. Her birthday was April the 13th. So for me to go through that passage, it was possibly my first biggest experience in recovery. When an addict would say, oh, there ain't nothing ever going on with you. Ain't nothing wrong with you. And then when it hit me, I really got in touch with how other addicts was feeling when they went through that same experience. And I hadn't gone through that experience at that particular time. So then when that experience became mine, and this is one of the gifts y'all gave me, was to reach out to the God of my understanding. So I had a long talk with my high power. And it seemed like during that passage, I was a little stronger than my brothers and sisters, my other siblings who didn't have a program of recovery. You know, it's one thing when you got a family when you got a family of users and you're the only one in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Can you imagine understanding what they're going through and they still think it's all right to have a drink or two? A little this or that. And all the time, you know, it's just tearing down their life. Slowly, slowly, but surely. But I really want to be here in case any one of them walk through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. And all I can be is an example of the power of God working through the lives of recovering addicts. So I intend to stay here. My clean day is March the 1st, 1996. All right. And I haven't found it necessary to go back out there and do no research. You know, and I'm real grateful for this topic because a lot of times that new baby, when I was new, I would listen to some of the most unheard of stuff and try to get in touch with those addicts and those feelings that they were sharing when it was their turn to help me out. And I am blessed to have gotten in touch with enough addicts on this path that just your presence makes the difference in my life. It ain't so much having the right thing to say or having to have all the answers, but just to look up and see y'all. It fills me to a point where you ever been in a meeting and you're going through something and somebody else sharing just what you're going through, and as if God directed that right to you. It's sort of like that nod, and when that head bouncing up and down, it's like, I know. That subconscious getting in touch with that connection, and I am truly grateful. I love Narcotics Anonymous. So, a few years later down the road, I lost my father April the 22nd. So April the 12th through the 22nd can be a little tough stretch for me. And I got a chance to, you know, work with him a little more, take him to the barbershop. And he passed away at 98 years old, man. And I said to myself, I don't know how in the world he made it. But I'm especially grateful for the very breath God blesses us with each and every day, because we just don't know. We do know this: if we use, we lose. So I've been, you know, sort of in touch with this Just for the Day meditation book. They got a page November the 19th that's specifically on this topic, the language of empathy. I'm one of them literature kind of guys who like to stick close to the literature, because this literature comes from our path, and addicts need to be as close to the truth as they can possibly be. I think the truth and the principles allow me to make that connection with the God of my understanding. Spiritual truths. And along this way, going through my process of the steps, I found out that these steps keep me a step ahead of my disease. If you don't think it's out to get you, get in touch with just how important the word vigilance is to the process of recovery. Now, I know we're talking about empathy, but vigilance will help you get to some empathy. Some empathy could help you get to the rest of the principles that you're going to need to stay ahead of this disease. All of our spiritual principles are self-help tools that help us help ourselves so that we can in turn deal with others to the best of our ability. I think relationships is the battlefield that God allows us to see just who we really are. Who are you to and in connection with another individual? We might fall short. We might not be perfect. But as we are allowed to trudge the road to happy destiny, I am so grateful that I got the Narcotics Anonymous. I hear a young lady who introduces herself at our meetings as no longer suffering. And I get in touch with what an addict will get when he or she comes to Narcotics Anonymous and finds some relief from the disease of addiction. Because when you think about living without hope, the degradation, the defense mechanisms, all the support that the disease of addiction has, it has to be offset by the spiritual principles and the tools given to us as a blessing in our process of recovery. So somewhere along the way, I picked up this habit of praying and meditating and doing the things necessary to stay afloat. But I found out was that Narcotics Anonymous didn't have no cut on it. And I'm real grateful. This has been a good opportunity for me to get in touch with what happens when you do a lot of service work and somebody else sees something in you that you don't even see in yourself. I love my life today as a result of a few 24 hours of surrendering to a way that my higher power know I can have and I can accomplish based on whether I get in my way or not. I can't blame you for me getting in my way. So, from doing a lot of listening, I've learned how to have a life rebuilt today based on building on top of a solid foundation. Our path is spiritual, not religious. So that any addict can come in here and get the help he or she need. And I am so happy that this weekend is, you know, been based on the usual thing happening. An addict like me coming up the road, getting enough days of fellowshipping and getting in touch with some meetings. Because, you know, we addicts, we can get so busy that going to meetings can become a diminishing thing. But I'm here to report that I don't want to get too far away from going to meetings. God told me that if I didn't ever leave the basics, I wouldn't have to ever return to them. So I've gotten in touch with how important it is to just keep coming back, to do what I have to do. The responsibility for my recovery rests squarely on my shoulders. And yes, this is a we program. By myself, I cannot get to where I need to be. My disease wants me by myself, isolated, where it can use the tools that it has to just mangle me and send me all the way back to a more devastating bottom than I hit before I got here. You know, we talk about jails, institutions, and death, and when I first got here, I couldn't understand why an addict would come in here and get a little bit of this and go back out. But it wasn't for me to understand. What I've come to find out and the point I've gotten to is that if he or she go back out, maybe they're just still working on their story. You know, I don't have to be so judgmental. I don't have to, you know, act like it's the end of the world. I think I feel like this because I've had two or three sponsees in the past in my first 5 years that went back out and they actually killed themselves. So does this all matter? To me, yes. I must also keep in touch with, our program is written so simply that any addict can follow it and get just what they need. I remember a young man that helped me out when I first came in. He said that they could be in RFK Stadium, the place could be packed, and the message would be, just don't use, and he would be the only one out of 60,000 that wouldn't hear the message. Gosh, this thing is so cunning that I can miss out on something by my subconscious mind going on in spite of God maybe trying to make a connection with me through another addict trying to deliver a message, a life-saving message. So I am real grateful that this isn't all about me. This is about we can recover. I love how they pick out the, well, not how they pick out, but that they do pick out different themes for each and every convention. Because all of that stuff is real powerful. The miracle in the mirror. Think about it. Every addict gets a chance to see in that mirror what it was like, what happened, and how it is right now. And if you're on this side of the fence and on the path of recovery, you should have something to be grateful about. That coin says, my gratitude speaks when I can, when I share with others the NA way. All I got is my story. You know, I got the shortest story ever been told. I messed up my life, I got here, and regained some resemblance of a new life. I retired from a job, I drug addiction all along a career I was trying to pull down the drain. And I retired from that job with a full retirement. So all I do now is turn up my meeting attendance and thank God every day. So for the last 2 days, I've been able to get out on the ocean every morning, find me a big giant stick, and write thank you God in the sand in big giant letters. Just to express how I feel. And thank the God of my understanding for this new way of life. I've been doing that every year for 11 years. And I might have missed one behind financial, my inability to stay on top of things, because the process is going to be, there's going to be some trying times. There's going to be some hits. Addicts don't always be where they need to be at any given time. But thank God that God is there to pull us through, man. Thank God for people, sponsors. And I ain't one of them kind of guys that try to cover the whole recovery thing so that the next speaker or whatever don't have nothing else to say. Because by the time I got up here, everything that's been said the whole time I've been up here has been enough to really inspire and encourage me back down the road to business as usual. Still trying to recover from the disease of addiction. It is an ongoing process. So in this language, I've learned how to remain teachable. You might not have met all the addicts God intends for you to meet yet. You need to keep coming back. As we see each other, we're everywhere. I'm real grateful. Now, usually they pass you a little thing, say 5 minutes. I know I was done when I got here. I ain't had nothing to really to say. I just knew I needed to be here. You know, when addicts get a chance to wash and bathe, brush their teeth, they don't have to be so constricted. You know, I'm in touch with a whole lot of things, man. Through listening, man, I'm so grateful. I just need to pass the dice and get on out the way and allow one of my predecessors to continue doing what's been happening all these years. They've been helping me every step of the way. I know I am blessed. And when I say that, man, it's because Narcotics Anonymous is a blessing, a true gift from God. I'll share this real quickly. I'm going to pass the dice. There was this guy walking down the street, and he got to a point where he looked up in the window of this store, and there was three brains in the store. There was the brain of a policeman, and it had a price tag under it, $5,000. It was the brain of a doctor, and it had the price tag under it, $10,000. Then it was the brain of the recovering addict. And it had the price tag on it, $100,000. So the guy was puzzled. He ran into the store and talked to the proprietor. He said, sir, why is the brain of the addict so darn expensive? The guy said, think about it. It's the only one that ain't never been used. So I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Our second speaker will be Shirley. Good morning, family. My name is Shirley, and I am an addict.
Hey, Shirley.
And I want to thank Cornelius for sharing, opening this thing up, getting us on the road this morning. And I also want to thank CPRCNA number 21 for taking a chance on an addict like me of sharing on this topic, the language of empathy, because the language of empathy is so important in these rooms. I want to thank my God for allowing all of us to get here safely and to return safely. I know the weather has taken a turn, and we need to all be very vigilant and careful going back home. But when they called me and they told me that they had selected this topic for me, and see, I'm the addict who doesn't pick my topics. You know, some people say, well, I want to pick this topic or I want to pick that topic. I allow the committee to pick the topics for me because I know that you all know me better than I know myself from day one to now. And they said, we want you to do the language of empathy because we think you're an emphatic type person. And I'm like, okay. And I thought about it, and see, empathy is just simply the ability to detect and feel someone else's emotions. And I have always been a person who could detect and feel other emotions. And 90% of the time that works, and 10% of the time it don't. And I was always the addict that always had the man, that always had something. So when you called and said, my mama died, I'm like, come on over. You know, I feel you. Come on over. You know, when you called the next day and said, I won the lottery, I'm like, oh, I feel you. Come on over. You know, and we just kept going on and on. So I've always had the ability, I believe, to detect and feel others' emotions. And I have fed on it. I have manipulated it. I have used it to my advantage and to my disadvantage. And it's funny. I selected jobs or careers, as we call them in Narcotic Anonymous, as people-orientated positions. And I am on my day job a receptionist. And as a receptionist, everybody comes in. My desk is the first desk, just like this. So everybody that come in there got to talk to me. Everybody. And when they come in, like I won't be there this Monday because I took a little time off. Because if you come in these rooms and you stay around here, you can accumulate some leave. Some I ain't know nothing about when I was using. So today I got leave so I can say, no, I might be coming back from Ocean City today, but I'm going to take me a few more days off next week. I see y'all when I see y'all. And but normally on a Monday morning, everybody comes to my desk and tells me how their weekend was. And I always, you know, say, oh, that was nice. Oh, you know, that's too bad that happened. And sometimes people get sympathy and empathy confused. And, you know, sympathy is simply when I say to you, oh, Cornelius, I'm sorry that happened. But I don't really empathize with him because I'm not really saying this with meaning or conviction or that I have any experience. I'm just saying it as maybe not even a friend, maybe just an associate. I'm just saying, oh, well, you know, that I'm sorry that happened, but I'm not really feeling it. Empathy is when I'm really feeling it, you know. And so in that position, it allows me to empathize with folks. You also can empathize very easily when you've had a lot of experiences. And most addicts have had a lot of experiences. So a lot of things that folks gone through, I've been through, so I really do empathize with them as opposed to just sympathizing. And in my part-time job, I work at a treatment center, so I'm always listening to clients, and they always want to talk, you know, and I'm okay with that, because 90% of the situations they've been through, I've been through. So the ability to sit and listen to folks and really focus is the difference between usually empathizing and sympathizing. You know, when people sympathize with you and pat you on the back, they kind of just brush you off. But when they empathize, like when somebody might come up to you in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and say to you, Cornelius, how are you today? And Cornelius is fine, because we always say we're fine. And that is just kind of brushing them off. Because if he would have said, well, you know what, let me tell you this, this, this. And they'd be like, okay, man, I'll talk to you after me because I got to really go. You know, but when you empathize with somebody, you can go out there, you can sit down and you can listen. Or you can do like we used to do back in the day, go out to the meeting after the meeting. You know, that's where I learned my emphatic ability to listen to folks up in the rooms and how they learn to listen to me after the meeting. You know, I heard Cornelius talk about he likes morning meetings. I'm not a morning person. I like nighttime meetings. I used to go to a meeting on East Capitol Street many, many years called Nighttime is the Right Time. It started at 10:30. It ended at midnight. It might have had 10 people in there, and it still ran over. Every night we run over because every night we still talking. We still empathizing with one another. We still sharing our experience, strength, and hope. And then we would get in the car and ride down the street to the IHOP on Blakesburg Road, you know, and continue to empathize with one another, continue to keep talking, continue to, you know, try to sort things out with one another. Because empathy is also the ability to not only detect, but to try to deflect people's feelings. Because when we are in situations, we can't always think rationally. So if I'm an emphatic person and you have a situation and I can see you going left, because I am emphatic, because I can detect that emotion, I can try to deter you to another avenue. You know, because it's been many situations where I was in a situation and I did not do what I was supposed to do. You know, I have been an addict that been in the rooms and, yes, had an altercation outside of a meeting and told some girl to get out of some man's car I was with, you know. You know, I'm that kind of addict. And it was those people that came to me and said, Shirley, first off, I only had 2 years at the time, and I was still on paper. So because they had been in a situation, because they could empathize with me, they was like, do you really want to go back to jail? Because you want to get on a girl to get out of the car of a man that ain't yours for real anyway. And I was like, no, I don't. And I let the situation go that day. But then I went to a Narcotic Anonymous picnic, and the same man brought another woman to the picnic, and I decided that I was going to go home and borrow a firearm from a friend of mine that's not in the room and go back to the picnic and do some damage, you know. And who would I have damaged? Two addicts that are still here today that are my predecessors, sat me down on that little strip of concrete at Candy Cane City and said, do you really want to go back to jail? And I was like, no. And they just had to keep doing it. And that's what we got to do in Narcotics Anonymous. We just got to keep focusing on what we have been through and what we can help folks with so that they don't have an ugly end result. And I believe that's what empathy is about. Empathy, the language of empathy is about me or you just talking each other through some situations. You know, my son died when he died, it'll be 4 years ago on 4th of July. And my son died as a result of this disease. And I carried the guilt that I didn't do enough to try to pull him up in these rooms. You know, now I see the error of my ways, but sometimes things have to happen before you can see, you know, what you did wrong. And I was always ready to come get one of us, but when he would call, I would just brush him off as to, you don't really want this thing. You just, you know, want to get out the situation today, you know. And people really had to come to me, and they really said, Shirley, you know, you just didn't know what you were doing because of your own situation. You know, when I think women that carry the guilt, and today I'm not guilty because my God has delivered me from that. I know my God today grants me new grace every single day. But we still carry those scars of the past that we coulda, shoulda, woulda did some things different. Now, if I'd had emphatic women like I have today in my life then, I could have probably done things differently. I could have had some women that had some children that didn't want to stop using. And you know, the thing about it is, when we know that our children use, 9 times out of 10, they really use a lot of times because we didn't give them the direction that they needed. Because how could I expect my son to do anything when his father and I was always in the bathroom with the door shut? You know, so today when I have those feelings where I really am lost and really don't know what to do and really just get in a situation with myself, I can sit down and talk to folks that have been through situations like that, you know. And when my son did die, the people who were associates called and they did say to me, "We are sorry that that happened." And I needed to hear those words. "I'm sorry that that happened." But my friends, because what empathy is a close connection between people. My friends empathize with me. My friends are the ones that came and sat with me, that walked me through the situation, that didn't let me go. And it happened on the night before. In fact, it happened a few hours before I was scheduled to get on a plane to go to the World Convention in California, in San Diego. I mean, my bag was packed. We were going out the door. And do you know that in that situation, I still thought it was just another time where he had used and he was going to be okay. They were going to take him over to Greater Southeast. They was going to put him on the psych ward if they had room, or put him on the detox ward if they had room. And it was going to be all right. I was going to come back and he'd be back home, you know. But it didn't happen that way. And that night is when I really found out the people that I had in my life that had that close connection with empathy, because they too were getting on a plane to go. And they came and they sat and they changed their flights. And the whole time they were gone, and everybody don't go everywhere at one time, because God makes sure that there's always somebody. So maybe my five closest friends got on that plane that morning at 6 o'clock, but he left me a whole fellowship of other folks to come sit with me. You know, and that's, for me, the empathy of this program, the language of empathy, is that close connection, that you know, not letting go when I want to, when I don't want to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and hear your situation. But God tells me, you better wake up and you better listen, because that situation might be yours next week, you know, and this program, and I heard Cornelius talking about this program. This program, I believe, takes people like me, you know, and like I said, I was surface emphatic because I always wanted to feel your feeling if it involved using, you know. But this program takes people that sometimes don't even have any emotional balance or any emotional feeling and turns us into caring, loving, kind people. You know, a situation that happened with me was that every year, well, let me go back and say this first. When I first got clean and I was going to things, and I told you that empathy is 90% good, but it can be 10% bad, because that also means that I would take on bad feelings as opposed to good feelings. Today I know how to empathize with you and move on. Then I did not know how to empathize and move on. Then I knew how to empathize and get caught. So if I would go to the NA picnic and Cornelius was sitting on the bench crying because something happened, my day was ruined. My day was ruined, because that's the bad part of empathy, is that sometimes you take on that bad feeling and you yourself can't get out of them. But as a result of coming around, as a result of doing what I was supposed to do, I know now how to empathize with your bad feelings and move on. You know, every year, I've been coming to Ocean City, let's see, for 15 years. My clean date is January 30th, 1991. I've been coming here for 15 years, because the first year I only had 3 months, and I couldn't have trusted myself, because I wouldn't have wanted to get up here with all these fine men. And then when I got home, I would have had a name for myself. So I said, I better wait until I get a little better in that area, you know. See, because I'm the kind of advocate with one man and then just stay with him until, you know, until the relationship 5 years down the road, you done twisted, you done flipped it, you done worked it, and it still ain't happening, you know. And, you know, so I've been coming here for 15 years, and I have worked on different committees. I have worked on program. I have worked on convention information. But some kind of way, they must have thought that indigent registration was my calling. Because I had been the indigent registration chair for like 4 years, the vice chair twice, and this year committee member. And you know, but the thing about it is, it allows me, when folks come in there, because it's a lot of folks that come to indigent registration that just don't want to pay their registration and try to be slick, you know. And it's a lot of folks that really need it. So this year they made a decision to really like crack down on it so that they could kind of weed out the people. Because see, there's some folks that come up in there. Policy said up until this year that anybody that said they was indigent could get a package. Well, there was folks coming in there that you know, had a significant amount of clean time, and they were not really financially manageable. Because I see them at the club every Thursday and Friday night, so I kind of know, you know. But anyway, the purpose of indigent registration is so that people that need this thing that are new can come in there and get it. And when folks come in there, y'all, and you're sitting in there, it ain't no joke. When somebody come in there and really wants this thing but don't know how to get it and really need to get that package and really need to just go to those workshops and listen and they're scared, you really have to be in fact. That is not a situation. That is not a committee to play with it. You know, people come in there and they're scared, just like I was. I was scared when I got here. I didn't know if you all were going to accept me, even though I was from D.C., even though I knew the ropes, even though I knew how to talk the talk in the street and in here in the beginning, I still was afraid. I still was saying, oh, Lord. And when I would go and want to hang out with everybody, I just kind of like got in their back pocket like they told me to do. I just hung out with folks. I just said, where y'all going tonight? Because I'm going too. And I was afraid they might say, I don't want that white bee going with us, you know. But I ain't never worried about when I was on Potomac Gardens, anybody tell me I don't want that white bee coming up in here, you know. I went on up in there. And if I had it curved like that, I curved it like that, you know. But when I got here, I was afraid because I was afraid of the rejection. I was afraid y'all might say. But what I did was I had to put those fears aside, and I have to hope that the people that was there that were my predecessors would have empathy and say, she need to be with us. And they did, and they took me under their wings. And I'm grateful, so grateful that I came from an area with some powerhouse women. You know, they told me what to do. They sat me down. They taught me the language of empathy. You know, I'm so grateful for that. Last night when they were showing the presentation, and I hope everyone saw it, it was showing some of the people that have gone on, you know, gone on to the real world. And it was so moving and so emotional. And I was looking at those people. A lot of those people are people that I've known all my recovery, you know, and I still turn to them. I don't go in the sand and write, but that's a good idea. I never even thought about that. You know, whenever people stand at the podium, I always pick up things that they say and try to incorporate them in my own life. You know, I always remember to thank God for my blessings, to thank God for allowing me to be here, to thank God just that, like you said, that I could get up this morning, you know, and I'm not a morning person, like I said, but to thank God that I could get up this morning. And what happens to me, y'all, whenever I have to speak, whether it's your anniversary and I've known you for 16 years, whether it's a convention, whether it's an opening night somewhere, I always can't sleep the night before. I always look at the clock all night, always afraid I'm going to oversleep, and I never do, but I do it anyway, you know. So this morning I was like, and then I dawdle and am almost late, you know. But today I was like, well, I wonder if Cornelius, I know they told me Cornelius was going to be here, and I know Cornelius is a very responsible person. I said, they could probably pick somebody else to be the speaker. I said, I could stay in this bed because it's cold out there, you know. But I did what I had to do, because one of the things I made a commitment to myself this year was that I'm going to do what I have to do for me. And I'm going to do what I say. And if I say I'm going to do something, even if you don't do your part, I'm going to say that I did my part. Because I want to be a better person. I want to be not just a person in recovery. I want to be a good person in recovery. You know, in the beginning, it was okay for me just to be clean. I stayed clean in here for 2 years just by going to NA dances, NA picnics, and going to meeting. But it wasn't until I had that first relationship that fall apart that I decided that I was going to take a box cutter and cut my wrist. But I just cut it a little bit,
And then I called one of the individuals in Narcotics Anonymous, and they came and got me and took me to a meeting. And they said, you don't have to say what the exact nature is, because I, to this day, still sometimes don't know what the exact nature is. I just know I feel bad. You know, and I went to that meeting, and I shared, and I said, I feel bad because, you know, the relationship is over. I cut myself with a box cutter, and I want to die. And they just took me out to eat afterward, you know. They was like, you here, you not dead, don't look that serious, you know. And we went out to eat. And that was empathy. That was the language of empathy. Identifying with me that maybe they hadn't been in the same situation, but I find that hard to believe because I ain't met a person yet that ain't had a broken heart. Everybody I know that had one or two or maybe like me 100 bad relationships. You know, so that was the language of empathy, taking me out, you know, telling me it's going to be all right. You know, and back then, because I only had 2 years, we were still kind of rough around the edges. So we was like, you want a jumper? You know, you want to beat up? But I was like, no, we better not do that, you know. But it would have felt good, but it wouldn't have accomplished anything because it wouldn't have made the man come back, you know. Wouldn't have did anything, but people say, that girl is still crazy. She clean, but she crazy. And in the beginning, a lot of that was said. She's clean, but she's crazy, you know. But the language of empathy has allowed me to get past that today. Today, I'm not sure what I might do if my man decided to tell me on the way home that he met somebody here, some nice little tenderoni, and he's leaving. I don't know, you know. I'd be like, okay, make sure you say have that mortgage checked away every month, you know. But I would like to think that I could go to somebody like Cornelius or just one of the other individuals in this program or call my network. I got a lot of strong women in my network. One of them just walked in the door. Must just when I said that. And, you know, I would call one of them, and I would hope because of the language of empathy, they would talk us through the situation, talk me through the situation. And I would hope that I could do the same in their, you know, in their time of need. But I'm going to wrap this meeting up because there may be some folks out there that would like to come up and talk about the language of empathy. As always, I am grateful to be asked to share, and as always, it's a privilege and an honor. From my God, from the committee, from the work that I myself have done in Narcotics Anonymous. So I want to thank you all for allowing me to share, and I'll keep coming back.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. Would anyone like to share? I just want to say something right quick, too. I would like to thank Cornelius and Shirley and for me having this opportunity. I have a lot of fear going on, and this right here did something for me. So.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our Madam Secretary.
Good morning. I'm an addict named Michelle.
Hey, hi, Michelle.
2 years clean, couple months.
All right.
The empathy. I seem to pick up people, you know what I'm saying, who's going through a lot of problems, and I'm very emotional. You know, I mean, if they're crying, I'm crying hard with them, and I mean, I'm the type of person that I stick with people so long, you know what I'm saying, to the bitter end. Just to the bitter end, to the point where it's really affected me and how I'm doing, you know. Now, I have a close friend. He's a male, and he had 19 years clean. He, you know, changed his mind, but y'all told me to, you know, try to have somebody in your life, you know, that you believe in, because I know he did it before. And I have stuck and stayed in my emotions. Now, I have a man, okay? But my emotions is going like this. Now, I've grown to love this gentleman, but I've gone through so many changes with that person, you know what I'm saying? And every time he would fail, it was like I was failing. And I had people saying, damn, Michelle, you look like you're using. And I say, no, I'm not using. But I'm using him, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, trying to help them. But the speaker last night, I came right to the door because I wasn't going to come. And he was like telling some of my story and what I was going through. And I was like, you know what? Sometimes you just got to let some shit go. Because, you know, I got high for 35 years. I'll be 54 in May. And I don't want to use no more. You know, I just don't. And I said, you know what? Some people, you just have to let go loving that. You know, I have a very nice friend, you know, that I live with. And does the world for me. This other person can't buy me a goddamn popsicle. Seriously. You know, I'm driving Mercedes, you know, and I drive tractor trailer. But it was like, I don't know, I always gravitate a lot to somebody who needs to be helped to be built up, you know. And I don't know if that's something is wrong with me because I do that. You know, it's really bothering me. But I made my mind up last night. I said, okay, I'm letting this thing go. I just have to because I feel like my recovery now is really at stake. You know, like I'm starting having sleepless nights. You know, not worried about me, worried about them, you know. And I went to the specialty meeting and ran into my sponsor because I hadn't seen her the whole time I was there. And I had been telling her what was going on with this strange relationship, I mean, because it's not sexual or anything, you know. And she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I think I'm ready to just let it go. You know, she said, well, we can talk about it some more. And I think that's what I have to do. You know, I know I'm going to cry a little bit because it's like it's strange that I sleep with my man every night, but I have spent more time with this other individual. You know, matter of fact, he's been in the car more than the man who bought the damn car for me. You know, and it's just so crazy. I have never had a relationship like this. And you know, like I said, I always gravitate females too. You know, I had a friend, her son passed away when I was in, we were in the treatment center. I was crying so hard. The director didn't know which one of us lost our son. And he was like, well, who's that? And my counselor said, oh, that's her friend. And he was like, she's crying harder than she is because, see, I can really, well, I haven't lost my son, but my son had recently got shot. And the fear of thinking I was going to lose my only child, you know what I'm saying? I lost my mind. And she stopped crying. We cried together, called for a week. She stopped crying. I was still crying. And she had to come to me. She said, Michelle, it's going to be all right. It was my son, and I appreciate y'all. You know, you stuck, you stayed, you were there, you held my hand. I went to the funeral, I was with the family. And she said, I couldn't ask for anything better, you know, from a friend. But I thank you for letting me just get this off my chest. And y'all said, keep on talking about it and get better. I'm going back to Baltimore. I had a couple meetings. And I shared some more. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Hi, family. I'm Nafisa, and I'm a miracle. I'm just like real, real grateful to be here. This is my first time at this convention in this area. I've never been to a convention this awesome. And I mean, all conventions are awesome, but like they really put a whole lot into this convention. And I'm just taking notes so I can take back to my area. I'm from the greater Atlantic City area. My home group is the Keep Coming Back group of Atlantic City is on Kentucky and Adriatic Avenue. I have 4.5 years clean, and the language of empathy, thank both of you for sharing. I didn't hear the whole message, but I heard a message. And when I think of the language of empathy, only thing I could think of is when I came around here, there was this thing that happened in the meetings and in the group consciousness and the business meetings and the area meeting and all that. And it was, we can agree to disagree. And like, I had no understanding of what that was. Cause where I came from, if we disagreed, it was a problem. We probably was going to see each other outside the meeting or outside. You know what I mean? It was no disagreement, and it wasn't no, it was a fight. You know what I mean? And like, the language of empathy, you have to learn how to disagree, agree to disagree in this process. Right? And you will learn how to do it. And I'm still learning. But being in service has put me in a position where I have to practice a whole lot of humility on a whole lot of days. And I'm learning how to do that only through being in service. Thank God for service, because had I not gotten service, I wouldn't be tapping into that on a deeper level. Because it ain't my plan. It ain't your plan. It's we do this together. And, I find myself when it's just like yesterday I had a situation and, me and the sister disagree, later on. It's funny because in this process, even if you at first, you know what I'm saying, have a disagreement with somebody, you know, if you working on you and you working on something, somebody at some point in time is going to come back and apologize, right? And that other person, if they working on something, they're not going to go around and talk about you like a dog because they disagree with you. The only thing that they're going to do is try to understand that, check it out, I know it ain't me, right? Because a lot of times when you disagree with somebody and it gets real big, like you'd be like, damn, was it that serious? You know? And it blows all up and like a whole lot of anger is displayed. At some point you say, man, you know, like... So I had to say to myself, so that I don't carry that spirit, because I didn't come here to the convention to carry nobody's spirit of whatever, right? And so I just, like, shared with a couple of the people I came up here with, and, like, I still said, you know, that, you know, I never said nothing bad about her, right? And I wanted to know if she was all right, you know? And she called me up later on that night and apologized or whatever, and, like, that's all it was. That was the end of it. You know, and I had to really, really, like, kind of like, I don't know how you, I guess coming around here and staying clean, you are able to do that. I had to really, really, like, not allow the disease, my thinking, and all that to take on this attitude of, because I would have been messed up. And I would not have been open to her apology, you know. And I'm actually, I don't know if anybody ever experienced this, where you look at you, something happen with you and you be like, wow, at yourself, you know. And that's how it was for me, that situation, because like inside I was searching to see, like, am I mad at her? Am I really, really accepting her apology? Like, cause I'm like, she blasted me and like, and she didn't really blast me, but it was like a conflict. And I was really trying to search her. I never really got angry at her, but I got loud. And I have a tendency, and I'm learning, that people misread me. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. They say, I got loud with her, and she was like, you don't have to scream at me. But she got in the car cursing, right? My son is in there, he's 9 years old, and I responded to her spirit. And I said, I'm just responding to you. And I got loud, and I noticed that in this process, people read me wrong because I talk real, they say aggressive, right? And I'm learning about this process in here. And recently, I'm going to say this and get out. Recently, my son called me on the phone, and I must have didn't answer, so he chirped me on the chirp, right? And this had to be God. But my voicemail on my other cell phone picked up, so while he's talking to me on the chirp, like, the voicemail caught the whole conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to hear me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God. I said, listen, no wonder people take me the wrong way. I said, check it out. I wouldn't like me if I talked to me like that. Right? And I wasn't even angry at him. We were talking about something, someone else, but the way I was talking, it was like so rough. But I thought I was talking. Yeah. I thought I was talking. See, I come around here, and because I ain't swinging no more, right, I think I'm doing real good because I'm talking. But even in talking, you have to learn how to talk. to people. And I believe the language of empathy also is probably when you don't know what to say, don't say nothing at all. You know, and that's one of the hardest things for an addict like me to do on a lot of days, you know, because I always feel as though I got something to say, you know, to respond, if you know what I mean? But I'm learning that everything don't necessarily need a response, no matter how it come at you, no matter what's said to you. Everything you does not call for a response. And when you grow to a level like that, that's a beautiful thing. And in this process, you know, I guess, you know, they tell me, like, don't expect, you don't know, the miracle's just going to keep on happening. And we recovering from more than just the drugs. And with that, I'm a grateful addict named Nafisa. Thanks for having me share.
Thanks for sharing.